Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Now actually the time to buy low on Penn State. We'll talk about that. Can Kirby Smart, why can he never beat Alabama? We'll look into the numbers there. And then at 7:20, we'll pepper in some Monday Night Football. I do have some props for both games tonight in the NFL. And then we'll get to postseason baseball as the stage is officially set after a wild end to the regular season. But Jenks, this just in, big news. Apparently today is National Coffee Day. And this could not come for a better group of people because we are a morning show, and I understand the people who are listening to the show also have to wake up very early. So coffee, near and dear to our hearts because we can't use hard drugs on this show to wake up. So, Den, tell the people about some of these deals for National Coffee Day because it feels like I certainly need to be taking advantage of these.
Yeah, some of these deals are nuts, and I would encourage everybody to look at what is around them. But like a Dunkin', I think if you get a free, if you buy a donut, you get a free cup of coffee. If you go to Starbucks and you buy a coffee and you have a rewards account, you get a free 100 points, which if you do the rewards, that's a cup of coffee for the next time. So they're not giving it to you like free today, but if you buy one, you get a free one, effectively. I think I saw I don't know if Paris Baguette is a national thing or a local chain, but they have a bunch of deals as well. Literally everyone that has coffee today has some sort of deal to give you something free or at a like crazy reduced price.
Ah, you love a free coffee. And I feel like people go crazy for this type of stuff. But at the end of the day, it's like, okay, you need to, you know, bend your day around this to go to one of these places. So at the end of the day, I do think it's a good marketing scheme. So let me ask you, Jenks, are you going to be taking advantage of any of these coffee deals?
I don't know. Maybe I'll go to Krispy Kreme because they've teamed up with Joe Jonas. You can get a free cup of Joe and a donut at Krispy Kreme. How about that for a partnership? You can do that. Also, you can get $6 off a DoorDash delivery of Dunkin' Donuts.
Ooh,
to your home if you want to do
Jenks
that.
Language.
I mean, come on. Get out of town. I could do that as well. There's a ton of great deals here. And oh my God, have you seen this quote from National Coffee Association President Bill Murray? His name's Bill Murray. He says, listen to this. You talk about a quote. Coffee staying power is grounds for celebration on this National Coffee Day. Wah, wah. Okay, Bill. Appreciate you. Appreciate you. But yeah, I actually had to come in and use some. Thank God that Roger's here because I had just like two small scoops of coffee remaining at home. So I made the most watered down coffee this morning. It was so gross. So I came in and immediately poured that out and then poured some of Roger's coffee that he made here in the break room. And it's so much better. So I'm going to do this and I'm going to go somewhere or get some sort of coffee delivered. But it's a great day.
Ah, great, great day to drink some coffee, as it always is here on the show. One quick thing before we move on. Do not get coffee from Krispy Kreme Donuts if you like iced coffee. This was some of the worst iced coffee I have ever had in my life. This is a core memory for me, Jenks. I was downtown, okay, and I forget what we were doing, but there's a Krispy Kreme down there. And you would think, oh, Krispy Kreme coffee, like they have to have something good to go with the donuts, right? And I'll say this, the hot coffee is fine, but the iced coffee was so bad the minute that I took a sip, I wanted to throw it back through the drive-thru window. Like it had a visceral reaction. It was so bad. It tasted like water and creamer and no coffee. So I will not be endorsing Krispy Kreme to go get iced coffee.
I was about to ask about that because I saw Krispy Kreme on this list And as I've shopped around a little bit, just like as a general human being, I have started to see more Krispy Kreme coffee on like department stores or grocery stores. I can't imagine that's good.
It doesn't sound like it. Great.
I cannot imagine that it's not fantastic.
Unless Joe Jonas is handing it to you.
I mean, Joe Jonas.
And then you'll be like, ah, this is great.
He's leading us astray. Honestly, yeah. He's leading us astray just for the almighty dollar. I'm sick. This is why Nick was always my favorite.
I'm a big Joe guy, but, you know, that coffee better be legit, Joe.
Joe, Nick, what's the other one? Can anybody name him? Name
Kevin.
That, Jonas.
Kevin.
Of course.
And then there's the
He's the bass player, the normal one.
And then there's the one, which he hates being called this, the bonus Jonas, the fourth Jonas brother. And how...
The youngest brother.
He's the youngest, and hates being called that. I shouldn't have said that. But he has his own type of music, which I've actually heard. And it's definitely different than... It's kind of like alternative indie. Totally different than anything his brother's ever did. Like, trying to make his own way. I think he's like a beard or something. But he's that one Jonas brother you don't think about. I bet he doesn't have a coffee deal today. Nah.
He needs to sign a deal with Shipley Donuts or whatever donut chain. I don't know if that's a national one. They have that here. But my point being is I think hot coffee is pretty hard to screw up. But like iced coffee, beware. I feel like you only go to like the staples for that. And even Dunkin' sometimes screws it up. So coffee is a big deal to us here on the show. And that's why we told you all the deals. And choose wisely, my friends. All right, so we had a huge weekend in college football. If you had any type of plans, I feel bad for you because what a Saturday it was in the realm of college football. Maybe not for Penn State fans, as Oregon best number 3, Penn State at home, 30-24, and this is how it went down.
They get to Pena. Aller, sideline. Oh, it's picked! Dylan Thiemann calls game. That's a walk-off whiteout winner for the Ducks.
And that is one way to silence a whiteout crowd. Drew Aller with the pick there as Oregon gets the win. And Jenks, it's wild to me, the butterfly effect. Because if this was any other good team against another good team and you lose in overtime, you say, oh, it was a great game. They lost in overtime. They played relatively well. It just, you know, at the end of the day, they didn't secure the win. But it's different when James Franklin is attached to this. And we know that this has already been the narrative. Like, since this game happened on Saturday, I've already seen this a million times. Big game James can't win the big ones. So do you think this is still a fair narrative? Do you think James Franklin deserves some of the blame here?
Yeah, he does. He absolutely does. I mean, the numbers bear that out. I appreciate the fact that James Franklin owns this. When it was over, he said, yeah, this is not a narrative. It's a fact. We haven't gotten it done. That's on me. But the numbers are remarkable. James Franklin at Penn State against top 10 opponents is 4-21. Against top 10 opponents in the Big Ten, he's 1-18. And in that stat I mentioned originally, that 4-21 mark, that is the third worst winning percentage against top 10 opponents of any head coach since 1936. So we've had people come on this show and say, you know, it's not that bad. He won this game, that game. You mean SMU last year? You mean Boise State last year? Like, his numbers are terrible in this spot. And again, I really appreciate the fact that he's owning this, that he's saying, this is on me, put it on me, we'll be back. This is a tough loss. I haven't gotten it done. But at some point, when you have this many instances, it's not just kind of leaning into something that might be true. It is true. Drew Aller in his career at Penn State against top 6 AP opponents is 0-6. So it's just all over the place. Number after number after number of Penn State faltering in the biggest of circumstances. And this was just another example on Saturday night.
Yeah, it has to be frustrating for Penn State fans, especially, like, even if you look simply at Drew Aller, because at times he throws these passes and they're just, you know, on the mark and absolute dots. And you say to yourself, wow, that's the Drew Aller that had all the hype. And this is the Penn State team that, you know, I wanted to believe in. And then the next play, you know, he's throwing a bad pick. So it's just one of those things where it almost feels, I feel like there is a Venn diagram of, like, similarities between the Ravens in the NFL and Penn State. to where it feels like they are beating up on all these teams that are pretty good, but when it comes to the elite, they just can't get the job done. Like, I think it's to a lesser extent for the Ravens because they have won some big games. It just feels like when the biggest games are at hand, they don't win them. And that has to be frustrating too, because nobody wants to be stuck in no man's land where you're just like a good team and every year like, okay, this is the year we have the most talent we've ever had. And then it just feels like you can't beat the best opponents in college football, because at the end of the day, you're never going to win a national championship if you can't beat the big dogs.
Well, and I think too that now that this has taken hold, it's become such a mental thing for Penn State. Like, everyone knows that's the thing with Penn State, right? Like, if you play for Penn State, if you're James Franklin, if you're Drew Allen, like, you know this, right? And I think whether it's subconscious or not, you play a little bit tighter because you know, and they were so close. Like, this was a game that was very meh. Like, it was just one defensive stop after another until things finally got going in the fourth quarter and in overtime. But you could almost feel the tension. Like, Penn State, they just don't want to lose. And I think at some point you kind of have to cut it loose and say, we're going to go for the win here. And look, Oregon's defense is very good too. Both of these teams are very talented defensively. But I feel like if you're Penn State, you almost have to do something against your initial instinct, because now knowing that they've been this close and they've faltered in this circumstance so many times, they're going to kind of default to playing it safe and playing not to lose. And if you do that, more often than not, you're going to lose.
Yeah, we saw that in the first half. Mm-hmm. It felt like they didn't really open up the playbook until, you know, the second half. And you said to yourself, where was this in the first half? You know, why didn't we have any of these big plays in the first half when we were just playing super conservative? But on the flip side, it's wild to me. Like, the biggest narratives of that game come from Penn State. And obviously, they lost at home. They were the number three team. But once again, it feels like people aren't talking about Oregon maybe as much as they should. And this was a big win for them. And it feels like they kind of, you know, just fly under the radar because they play on the West Coast and people forget they're in the Big Ten. But like, this is a very solid team and this was a massive win.
Did you see Dan Lanning looking like he was on cocaine after that game? Did you see that? Like, a red face, his eyes were this big. Love this team.
Big win.
Big win. Love this team. Love these guys. Oh, God, what a win. Like, he was just absolutely just amped up, but it was a huge win. I mean, going into Happy Valley, the whiteout is always so very cool. And I saw someone say on Twitter, can we admit the whiteout isn't all that it's cracked up to be? Like, whatever, dude. Like, the whiteout is really cool. It's one of the cooler things that you see in college football. But Oregon is no joke, and I was really impressed with how they handled themselves going into that environment and then just kind of absorbing the slugfest earlier in the game until they found a way to make that huge defensive play, that interception in overtime. So Oregon is the real deal, and this was the one loss that I thought they would take. I thought they would lose to Penn State. I like Penn State in this game, but once again, the Oregon Ducks, man, they're no joke. They continue to recruit at a high level, and Dan Lanning is a very good head coach.
Right, and I feel like this is one of those games that kind of forges your team in the fire. Like, when you win this type of game, it gives your team a ton of confidence that you can play in those big games. So now we see it in the odds that Oregon is way up there. They have the second shortest odds to win the national championship, right behind Ohio State at 5-1. The other big game of the weekend, let's go to Alabama and Georgia. So number 17, Alabama, best number 5, Georgia, in Athens, 24-21. Ty Simpson, a big day, including this 2-yard rushing touchdown.
Simpson on the move. He's going to keep it and score.
I'm not going to lie, Jinx. I didn't see this one coming, but the numbers are ahead of us when it comes to Kirby Smart against Alabama. This just happens to be his bugaboo. Alabama, most of the time, it's been Nick Saban, and we thought maybe it's going to be different with Kalen DeBoer, because Kalen DeBoer's teams have not been the best on the road, but what a performance from the Tide. It felt like they led this game the entire game and never looked back. Are you back on the Alabama train? Do you believe in this team, Jinx?
Nah, I'm starting to. I was never really on the Bama train to begin with this season, but maybe it's time I hop on the caboose. Like, James Franklin should shake hands with Kirby Smart, and James Franklin should say, I can't win against top 10 teams. And Kirby says, well, I can't beat Bama. Get on over here and let's have a beer together. Kirby Smart has lost 10 of his last 11 games against Bama.
Yeah.
And you're right. It's no longer a Nick Saban thing. Like, Bama's in his head where all of a sudden there's critical turnover, or instead of maybe going for a field goal, they go for it on a fourth down. Like, Georgia acts differently. The thing that I took away was Ty Simpson. I mean, he was just spinning the ball in the first half. And I'd seen him play. I haven't seen him play this effectively. He was unbelievable in this game. And Sammy P was talking about the end of last week, maybe a sprinkle on Ty Simpson Heisman futures, and he looked great in this game.
Yeah, I will say, to Kirby Smart's defense, he's at least won two national championships.
Yes.
James Franklin cannot say that. All right, coming up next, two Monday night games, and we got a bunch of props. That's next on the Daily Tip.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5.
I know where I'm going to bet from now on.
Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. It's a Monday, which means we have Monday Night Football on the docket. We do have a double dip tonight, the Jets and the Dolphins, the Bengals at the Broncos. We'll give you some plays for both of them. But James, before we get to that, I saw this soundbite, and usually I would say that's a lot for a rookie to say. But listen, this Titans season has been nothing short of unwatchable. Yesterday, they didn't score a single point against a bad Texans team. Got blown out 26-0. Jenks, I had to stop watching this game and transfer over to the radio. I was like, I need to go sit outside for a little bit because I need some sunshine on my face. I need a distraction from this horror fest that is this Titans offense. But I'll say this. The worst part of this offense is not Cam Ward. Usually you can point at a rookie quarterback and say, okay, what did you expect from a rookie quarterback? Cam Ward has not been the problem. I feel like it has been a comedy of errors, whether it's Calvin Ridley, who cannot catch a football, Brian Callahan, the head coach that does not know the rules of the National Football League, or the Titans handing down their play calling duties. They're like, listen, Brian Callahan's not going to be calling the plays anymore. And you're like, okay, the offensive coordinator's going to do it. No, they even bypassed the offensive coordinator, gave it to somebody else on the staff. So it's wild to me that, like, you don't have enough faith in your offensive coordinator to call the plays. Like, why do we even hire this guy? So it's been a bad season for the Titans. And Cam Ward had a press conference, and his quote, it sounds jarring, but listen, it's what we're all thinking.
I mean, if we keeping a buck right now, we ass. So we 0-4. We have, this point, we got nothing to lose. We dropped a quarter of our games, and we've yet to do anything. So we have to lock in, especially myself on the offensive line. From the defensive line, from the special teams, to all three faces, we have to play together. We have not played together this year yet. And that's just something that, you know, we want to preach about it every day. Every day we got to do better. And we're doing that, but it has to show up on Sundays. It hasn't showed up yet, but it got to show up next week.
Man, just depressing. And listen, usually when you see a rookie quarterback call his team ass, which I don't even know if I can say that, but I did. He said it. But that's like the descriptor that you need to use for the Titans right now. They are bottom of the barrel level bad. And you don't get any bonus points for being the worst team in football for 2 years in a row. Like, you don't get any, like, hole punch on your car being a frequent customer of the worst team in the NFL. So it's extremely disappointing, and I think he is warranted in saying this, but at the end of the day, like, words only mean so much. And yeah. I don't know if you guys had this with the Commanders when they were bad, but, like, we have some veterans on the team that are always running their mouth saying, like, we're going to be better. Nobody's going to run the football on us. Okay, prove it. Maybe win some games. Like, I'm tired of hearing the words. Like, let's see some action. But from a Cam Ward standpoint, I feel like there is really nothing he has said so far that has made me, like, dislike him. I feel like from a PR standpoint, he has hit everything on the nose to the point where, like, I agree with him. I think it's fine for him to say this. He is the leader of the team, and there is not that many veterans on this team. So, like, somebody had to say it. He is 100% warranted here.
Yeah, they stink. They absolutely stink. It's a bad football team. They've tied the record for their longest losing streak since they moved from Houston to Nashville in 1997. Like, this is really bad. And I don't have any issue with him saying this because I don't look at it, and I certainly didn't take away the idea that he was taking shots at his teammates. He was saying, look, we're a bad football team right now, in so many words. And he's right. You know, if you listen to other guys in the locker room after that game, they essentially said the same thing, maybe not as harshly, but they all said, look, we're tired of talking about it, as in, oh, we got to play better. We all need to be better. Like, of course we do, but I'm tired of talking about it. We just need to do it. And certainly when you take someone like that who is, it's always interesting to me to watch high-level athletes who experience adversity for the first time, maybe not, you know, the first time facing some sort of bump in the road, but real adversity. And it's a real challenge to the character because most of these guys have always been winners. You look at Cam Ward, he's been a winner everywhere he's gone, won game after game after game. Then you get to the pros, and it's, I've never had a four-game losing streak. I've never lost games like this. I've never been shut out. And so ultimately, down the line, you hope that he learns from this. It sort of builds that resolve, and he's better because of it. But it's never easy when you're facing this for the first time.
Absolutely not. But I do think he's handled himself with grace. And I feel like he said all the right things. And I will say there are flashes of a franchise quarterback in there.
Chelsea?
At halftime. But we missed. Am I on here?
There you go. You cut out for a second, but now you're back.
Well, I was just ranting about, like, the special teams ain't great either. Like, two missed field goals in the first half when your offense can't get anything together. It just feels like nothing's working for the Titans. But let's get myself out of a bad mood. And, Jenks, we do have two Monday Night Football games tonight on the card, starting with the Jets at the Dolphins. So the Dolphins are favored in this game. 2.5-point home favorites, total of 45. I think desperation is going to be a key word in this one because obviously the Dolphins are skating on thin ice. It has been a terrible season thus far, with zero wins to their name. They come to this game 0-3. Now they're back at home, and they're facing a team where they should be able to at least keep it close against a Jets team that's suffered a ton of injuries on the defense with a bunch of linebackers now being added to IR. But what did you make of this line? The fact that the Dolphins are 2.5-point home favorites. Like, to me, I automatically added this to a teaser. I do not think that the Dolphins can blow out the Jets. But do you think the Jets have a chance now that Justin Fields is back in the mix as quarterback?
Maybe. Oh, God. Here's a game I don't want to bet on. Jets-Dolphins. I would probably take the Jets on the money line is probably where I'd put my money. It's a little, I mean, maybe I shouldn't be shocked that the Dolphins are favored here by 2.5 points. But I think if anyone can spark the Jets, it's obviously Justin Fields. I just don't trust the Dolphins' defense. I think more than anything else, that's the issue for me, right? Like, this is one of the worst defenses in the National Football League. I like the over more than anything else, and I just don't know if the Dolphins are going to show up. Like, Aaron Glenn still has a bunch of guys who are trying to get him his first win as the Jets head coach. I feel like Mike McDaniel has a bunch of guys who are ready to quit. And so when you have those two types of teams going up against each other, it really doesn't give me confidence in one side or the other. I would say based on the defenses that we've seen and the fact that both sides do have individual offensive talents, that maybe I would go with the over here, but it's hard for me to go with the side.
Yeah, I think the tough part is trusting the Dolphins' offense, especially with the way that Tua has looked this year, where it feels like he's seeing ghosts, and it's not going to get better because Miami has 7 offensive linemen on injured reserve. So, like, that goes into it as well. It's not just Tua is bad, which I think that goes into it as well, but the offensive line is not going to give him a ton of time to throw tonight, and it's really hard to use those explosive weapons at your disposal when you don't have time to get the ball down the field, and Tua's just not even looking down the field. It just feels like he's checking it down constantly. And then you look at the Jets, which, you know, they have some injury concerns, excuse me, as well, and they come into this game 0-3, But I do think Justin Fields brings a spark to this offense. And we've seen the Dolphins kind of struggle against mobile quarterbacks. Like, obviously, Josh Allen is, you know, one of one. But we saw this even in the Colts game with Daniel Jones on the ground. So I think he's going to add something to this mix. And I think Breece Hall is due for a better game this one. He's been an interesting like case study because I think when he first came into the NFL, he was so exciting. You know, he was such a Swiss Army knife for this offense. But this year, it feels like he's kind of fallen flat, at least from a production standpoint. But I do think this game kind of lines up well because in most of these games, they haven't had a positive game script. And it's really hard to employ the rush attack when you're not playing with a lead or you're not even close. Like that Buffalo game. You know, they were losing, you know, by 20 points. The game was not close. They lost 30-10. And even if you look at that Bucs game, I know the final score was 29-27, but like remember that was the game where they had the blocked field goal return for a touchdown. That game was not as close as that final score kind of indicates. So I think this is a good game for him. Plus, you get a low number on him. 56.5 is his rushing prop tonight. I think I'm going to be hitting that as one of my favorite props tonight in Jets Dolphins.
One prop I would look at just based on the value is an anytime touchdown for Justin Fields because you can get it at plus 240. I mean, he comes back to the lineup. This is a terrible Dolphins defense, and we know Justin Fields can use his feet as much as he uses his arm, oftentimes more so if he's ever under pressure. But I feel like when you look at the anytime touchdown prices for the Jets, you get Breece Hall at plus 150. Garrett Wilson is plus 150. But Plus 240 for a quarterback who uses his legs as much as Justin Fields does, I think is a lot of value. So if you're looking for a sprinkle, that's some good plus money. I like that play as well.
I think you could also probably look at his rushing attempts because when he goes over this, he goes way over it. Had 12 attempts against the Steelers. And again, that was the only game he played in that was somewhat of a positive script. Because against Buffalo, that was a blowout. Obviously, you're not going to run your quarterback into the ground when you're losing by 20 points. So over 8.5 rushing attempts tonight in a primetime game where desperation, it feels like the theme for both of these teams, I think he goes over that as well. His rushing prop, if you're looking for yardage, is 46.5. It feels like a touch high to me, but I do think the attempts at least will be there. Next up, let's go to the Bengals and the Broncos. Broncos laying 7.5 at home. You could view it as a get-right spot for a Broncos team that's kind of underperformed this year, at least relative to expectations. Total of 44 here. It's going to be Jake Browning once again for the Bengals, and that Bengals offensive line so far this year has once again been terrible. So same question for Jake Browning as I had for Tua Tagovailoa. If you don't have time to throw the football down the field, how do you take advantage of weapons like Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins? I think that's going to be the story for me. But 7.5 points, Jenks, that is a lot in the NFL, especially for a Broncos team that hasn't been especially good at covering.
Yeah, I would grab the Bengals here. 7.5 seems like a huge number, especially when the total is, what is the total here? 44 and a hook? I mean, that's a low total for such a large spread, and I feel like you're getting a little value here on the Bengals just because they look so bad against the Vikings. And I know the Broncos defense is really good too, but they haven't been the defensive unit yet that we saw last year when they were top 10 across the board. And I feel like when you look at Jake Browning, what he's done throughout his career, like he's that one guy who will look terrible and look really good. Like he's completely inconsistent. So he could come out tonight and throw three picks. He could also come out tonight and throw two or three touchdown passes, especially when you have the receiving weapons that he has. And then on the flip side, Bo Nix hasn't exactly taken that next step either this season. So when I see that, I think Bengals getting 7 and hook, or maybe an under is the right play. We know primetime unders over the past 4 years have hit at a rate of a little more than 60%. And so when I think about the quarterbacks involved here, I would lean that way. But there's no way I'm laying 7.5 with Denver. That's way too many points.
Especially, like you mentioned, Bo Nix has not been super trustworthy this
year.
And even in situations where he's had time to throw, like that's the craziest part. It would be one thing if he was under fire all game long and he had a bad offensive line, but the Broncos have one of the best offensive lines in football. So it's not apples to apples when you look at Jake Browning versus Bo Nix in this game. Mm-hmm. Jake Browning has a much worse offensive line. And I'll say this, like simply from the numbers, Jake Brown, Browning's career record in the NFL as a starter is 7-7. Bo Nix is 5-3. So right. It just doesn't feel like there's that much separation, or at least from a prove it standpoint. Bo Nix had some good games last year, but still he is on a much better team. And I think from a prop standpoint, this one's difficult as well, just because if you look at the Bengals, traditionally you would say, okay, here's the losing side. They're going to be playing from behind all night. And T. Higgins has had some massive games against the Broncos in the past. But if Jake Browning's going to be under duress the entire night, it's just, we've seen this. Like, I've taken props in games where a quarterback hasn't eclipsed 100 yards passing. So it just doesn't feel like a safe bet to me to play any props in that game. Plus, the total's 44. Oddsmakers are not really expecting a big game. Maybe you could expect a big game from J.K. Dobbins, though. If this one gets out of hand, his rush total is set at 64.5, and he's had some big games against the Bengals. Because remember, he's played on some teams other than the Broncos, played for the Chargers, played for the Ravens. So he's faced this team quite a bit. But to me, this is not the bet-worthy game. I know we laugh about Jets-Dolphins, but I do like the props in that game better as opposed to this one, just because the Broncos are a really tough, on paper, defensive matchup.
Yeah, this is maybe where you maybe go under on some props. And I think that the natural inclination is, okay, you look at the over when it comes to certain props. But in a game like this where it looks like it'll be more of a defensive battle, even though the Bengals defense gives me a little bit of pause, I just don't know, again, yeah, if Bo Nix can take advantage of that. So maybe you look at some unders here. I think the only guy I would feel comfortable maybe going over with is Jamar Chase, just because he's Jamar Chase, and knowing him, I mean, he's one of those guys. It's like Emeka Ebuka yesterday that you were on, right? He got his receiving yardage prop in one play. And when you take an explosive receiver like that, sometimes you can do that with Jamar Chase. Total set at 65 and a hook. But if I'm looking at props here, I'm probably going to skew towards the under.
Yeah, and keep in mind that Jamar Chase is probably going to be covered by Pat Surtain, yeah, the second, who is the reigning NFL Defensive Player of the Year. So I think T. Higgins maybe works out a little bit better. But again, T. Higgins had 15 yards receiving last week, so I don't know. All right, coming up next on the show, we get to baseball. The postseason picture is fully drawn. We tell you what it means for your bets next.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5.
I know where I'm going to bet from now on.
Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah, you're seeing exactly,
you know
what,
why it's not
outside of Cleveland,
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. Time to get it going and dial in, because the postseason is finally here in baseball. You know I'm a baseball gal, and as much as football thrills me on the weekend, I still love a good baseball postseason matchup. So we'll get into the playoff picture, which matchups you should have your eyes on. But Jenks, before we get started on that, I wanted to mention some of these playoff streaks. One that came to an end. The Astros will not be in the postseason this year for the first time in 8 straight years. And what a stretch it's been for Houston. 4 straight AL West titles before this year. ALCS, 7 of the last 8 seasons. 2 World Series. 4 American League titles. And again, this is the first time in 8 years where they will not be in the postseason. It's going to feel weird when you look at the postseason in the American League and the Astros are not in the bracket.
That's fine. I'm ready for some new blood anyway. But it is strange. You know, I think a lot of people are ready for a team that isn't the Astros to make a run. And full credit for what they've done when they weren't cheating. But ultimately, I feel like this is a team that, look, it wasn't just a few weeks ago when it looked like, oh, they're going to do it again. They got Correa, and it's like, okay, they got the band back together. They're going to go for it again and make an make a run in the postseason, make some noise. But I'm ready for sort of a different feel to the postseason and some different teams and some different angles. And I feel like we've got it this year.
Yeah, it feels wide open, especially in the American League. And I do think this is something that goes in baseball's favor, because as much talk as we've heard about, you know, how the payroll is so different across the board, how some teams just spend all kinds of money, cough, cough, Dodgers, it doesn't necessarily guarantee you a World Series win. So you look at the American League, and like I'm looking at these teams, Blue Jays, Mariners, Guardians, Red Sox, Yankees, and Tigers. At the middle of the season, I would have said, okay, the Tigers are the cream of the crop. But right. They had a disastrous stretch over the last month where they lost their division lead and they narrowly made the playoffs. So it doesn't feel like this is the best time to bet on the Tigers. But it feels really wide open to me, which is a good thing for entertainment purposes.
Yeah, that's the one thing about this year's playoffs that I think is so great is that some of the old guard is gone, mainly the Astros. And so, of course, you're going to have the Dodgers, you're going to have the Phillies, right? You know, the Yankees and some of these stalwarts that have always been in the playoffs or generally in the playoffs. But then you have, like, what are the Mariners going to do? Are they going to put it together? And they have Cal Raleigh. Are the Tigers going to show any signs of life? Probably not. What about the Reds? Are they going to do? I don't think the Reds are going to do it, but the Brewers, I think, are a great story. Like, this is a team that, and I know we've discussed this a lot, biggest run differential of all of baseball during the regular season, a very complete team. Bob Uecker passed away earlier this year, sort of playing inspired baseball because of that. So you have different teams that we normally don't see in the postseason who have a lot of different storylines to go along with that, and I think it makes the postseason even more interesting.
Yeah, the National League certainly looks like the better side of the equation for me. Because you have three teams that I would not be shocked if they win the World Series. You talked about the Brewers all season long being the most dominant team in baseball. Then you have the Phillies with that rotation. Even though Zach Wheeler is not currently healthy, it's still a rotation that had great anchors this year. And Christopher Sanchez and Ranger Suarez and even some guys kind of coming out of the woodwork to shore up that rotation late in the season. But for the Phillies, they've always been a great team on paper. It's just the hitting sometimes goes cold for no reason at all. And this is going to be the same deal that they saw in previous years where they kind of have to wait around and wait and face the winner of the wild card series. And they've proved rusty sometimes when they have to wait around for a few extra days. And here's a nice little present for them. You get the winner of the Reds and the Dodgers. The reigning World Series champions could be coming your way in the first round for the Phillies. Doesn't feel great, but I will say this year, the Dodgers do not have depth when it comes to their bullpen. At the end of the season, they were using Clayton Kershaw coming in relief in some of these games, and I understand it's all hands on deck, but still, this is not the juggernaut Dodgers team that we thought it was going to be entering the season. When they have that massive payroll, you'd think, oh, they're going to waltz their way to a World Series. I don't think that's the case, especially in the National League.
Oh, sorry about that. Thank you. Yeah, I don't think so either. And, you know, I read this stat and I did not believe it, but we haven't had, at least this century, we haven't seen a back-to-back champion. And the Dodgers, again and again and again, have been, you know, that one team. They have been the dominant team this century, right? Certainly a better roster than anyone else on paper, but they don't have, I think, as many World Series titles as maybe we thought they would. And when they went on this spending spree, right, where they just bring in talent after talent after talent. So it just goes to show, A, how hard it is to win a World Series, and that, B, there are always teams that are willing to step up and raise their level of play when we get to playoff time in Major League Baseball. I mean, but are you going to be shocked if the Dodgers win it? No, but I also don't think that the pressure is on them because they have that title. I think the pressure is really on the Phillies more than any other team, and Bryce Harper in particular. You know, you've got guys on that roster like a Kyle Schwarber, like a Trey Turner, and they've won it all before. But if you're looking at the greats in the game who need that one world championship to sort of solidify their resumes, like Bryce Harper is up there, right? He's been a generational player but has not been able to come home and win a World Series, where the Brewers, I feel like, are playing with house money. They're not, I don't want to say they're lucky to be here, but I don't think anyone expected them to be the one seed in the National League. The Dodgers, yeah, the Cubs have done it, but the Phillies are the one team that have been so close and haven't been able to get over the hump, and so I think that's the team that, when it gets down to it, is going to sort of feel the screws tighten a little bit if they get deeper and deeper into the postseason.
Well, they are the favorites to win the World Series. Yeah. So you're right on the nose there, is that the expectations are certainly there for Philadelphia. Dodgers 5-1, Mariners plus 550. They've gotten some juice this year behind the big dumper. He's had a great season when it comes to home runs. Yankees 7-1, Blue Jays 7-1, Brewers at 8-1. Jenks, what do we think of the Brewers at this price? Like, obviously, we are a betting show, and a lot of this is price dependent, but the team with the best run differential in baseball, you're getting them at 8-1. And sometimes matchups matter. And I think they actually got the good side of the bracket. I'm not discounting the Padres and the Cubs, but like, they don't have to play the Dodgers or the Phillies, at least until the NLCS. So I think the Brewers at 8-1 is a pretty solid play.
I like the Brewers a lot. And that's the thing, is that they have the starting pitching that you need, like with Woodruff or Peralta, Mizorowski. I think he's trying to get healthy, but they have some arms,
Clint
right?
Priester.
Yeah, and Priester. There's another guy right there. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I know when you think of the Brewers, you don't think about their bats, but look, they've generated a ton of runs. And then you look at their starting rotation, and you've got to have depth there. You've got to have guys who can at least give you a quality start. And they have that as well. I kind of feel like they get punished by the fact that they're not in a major market, or they just don't maybe have the, you know, the star power of the Dodgers or the Phillies, even the Padres or some of these teams that have the bigger names. But when you look at the numbers, the Brewers get it done as well as anyone. That's why they're the one seed, and there's a lot to like about Milwaukee, especially at that price.
Yeah, so I think the Brewers are 8-1, pretty solid play. Even if you wanted to take them to win the National League, because then they just need to make it to that. They're plus 325. I think that's a really solid play. Let's talk about X factors here, because I think on paper, the Guardians do not look like a team that would possibly win the World Series. If you look at run differential, I think they're one of the worst teams in the postseason still standing. Right, but it's not been a case, you know, for wins and losses, because they have been the hottest team down the stretch. And Jenks, we've seen this in Major League Baseball, where a team can get hot down the stretch and they ride it all the way to the World Series. Saw it with your Nationals. We saw it with the Phillies. I think it was the year that they lost in the World Series. But just because you don't have a great regular season on the whole, it doesn't always matter. If you capture that lightning in a bottle the last month of the season, and listen, what their starters have done over this last month should not be discounted either. I think they had 19 straight games where the starters allowed two runs or fewer. That is a massive deal when you are getting consistent performances from your starters, and that's going to give your team a chance to win a lot of games. Your team doesn't even have to score that many runs, which is great for the Guardians because they're not a power-hitting team. So I think the Guardians are a sneaky play here. I'm not sure if they win the World Series, but I do think they could possibly cause some chaos, especially when their first round matchup is against the Tigers, the team that kind of they had their hopes smashed by the Guardians, and the Guardians won that division. So very interesting in the first round in the American League.
The Guardians are a really fun story. There's no question about it. But it's also remarkable to me that they were sellers at the trade deadline. You know, they get rid of Shane Bieber and Paul Sewald. They sent Sewald to the Tigers of all teams, and yet here they are making this run. It just makes no sense whatsoever. So momentum is a real thing, and sure, they could carry this deeper into the playoffs, but I feel like once they start playing, well, outside of the Tigers, they've just owned the Tigers. I'm not going to be surprised if they advance past Detroit in the opening round, but I feel like past that, they have to run out of steam, right?
You'd think. But again, like, sometimes baseball doesn't make a ton of sense. Let's talk about this first round matchup for a second, because I do think it's interesting that the books have this at a pick'em price. It is a 3-game series, and on paper, the Tigers should win this series, but we said that about the regular season. You know, the Tigers had their fate in their hands, and the Guardians kept beating them. But Tariq Skubal obviously is going to be up for this matchup. Do you think this is a mental block at all? The fact that Tariq Skubal had, like, a game to forget against the Guardians, and he's going to be leaned on heavily here. Like, the Aces in the postseason have more of the pressure on them, because especially in a, like, a 3-game series, you know, you win game one, and that is a huge swing of the pendulum for momentum in your team's favor. So I don't know what's going through the head of Tariq Skubal right now, but they certainly could use an ace performance from somebody who's won a Cy Young.
I think he's going to be okay. And I think when you look back at that one game against the Guardians, which they really needed, where he just kind of fell apart, you know, he hit David Fry in the face and he threw that ball through his legs first. He had a wild pitch. But I think hitting David Fry just really messed with him in that moment, which I understand because that was hard to watch. You could tell Tarik Skubal was totally affected. And I think that jarred him so much in that moment that everything else kind of fell apart around him. So now that that is done, he's just too good, I would feel like, to falter again against this Guardians team, which does not hit the ball. But yes, Detroit will need him. They'll get one from him, but can they get more? I don't know.
Yeah, the Tigers need to hit as well. Because, like, Tarik Skubal's had some good games, and he's just not gotten the run support. The postseason is so good this year, we haven't even mentioned that the Red Sox and Yankees match up in the first round as well. Yeah. Should be a good one. Coming up next, reacting to Sunday Night Football, the tie that shocked me. It's next on the Daily Tip.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.